You're listening to Reality Sandwich Radio, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, and our planet, community, and economy. To learn more about the Healthful Living model, go to healthfulliving.org. Reality Sandwich is hosted by Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant, and Martin Matthews, Certified Medical Hypnotherapist. Past episodes of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KPOO, San Francisco, 89.5 FM. This is Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant, and you have reached Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth, where we talk about topics of the mind, body, and our planet. Today, we have on Patty Torza, a colleague of mine, a nutrition colleague. She has been in the health and fitness industry for 34 years and has been full-time as a personal trainer for the last 13 years. She has a BS in health and physical education and an MA in kinesiology, and she is a certified nutrition consultant. So welcome, Patty.
Thank you, Julie.
I wanted to just start with a little bit of your background. How did you get involved in fitness? What is your personal experience in the fitness world?
Sure. My family was pretty active, so as a child, we were into sports right away. We skated, we skied, we camped, we hiked, just very active family. My dad was an athlete, he was a golfer.
Hmm.
So growing up, I think by seventh grade, I knew what I wanted to be, and that was a health and physical education teacher. So I never looked back. And,
wow.
You know, graduated with the BS in health and physical education, taught junior high, high school, taught collegiate, and 13 years ago decided to strike out on my own and become a personal trainer, and loving it.
Wow.
Absolutely love what I do.
What did you do in the collegiate realm?
I was a Division I women's basketball coach.
Wow.
So I coached at that level, which was a real great experience. I also taught physical education, but my main job at the collegiate level was coaching.
Hmm. And what about yourself personally as an athlete? What types of activities, what types of sports were you most interested in?
Oh, God, I love them all. Right, currently skiing, inline skating, golfing. I'm a big golfer. I almost went on the pro tour in my teens and in early 20s, but something happened to steer me in a different direction, which I'm kind of happy about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I wanted to live out of a suitcase. But, yeah, I mean, I love to hike and camp and skate and ski, both cross-country and downhill. You know, my basketball, volleyball days are over, but I'm enjoying the recreational pursuits right now.
Wow, that's really exciting. No wonder you've been... So you've been doing this for more than 34 years in some capacity.
I think since birth, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And if any of you have not met Patty, she doesn't look a day over 37.
Thanks, Julie. And if we do the math, we know I'm at least a day over 37.
Right. So let's talk about just physical fitness in general. There are various components to physical fitness. And can you talk about those?
Yeah, sure. Most people think of physical fitness as, you know, either cardiovascular or muscle strength and endurance. But there are more components. There's five of them. The first one, and they're not in any particular order, is cardiovascular fitness. This means some activity that sustains your heart rate higher than resting for at least 15 to 20 minutes and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So an activity like swimming or walking or running or canoeing, something that's keeping your heart rate elevated, okay? So, I mean, almost anybody can walk, and if you can't walk, you can get into a pool, all right, for swimming. So that's the first component. Second component is muscle strength and endurance. These are activities that place stress on the muscles, okay, and that work the muscles anaerobically without oxygen. So you can only do it for so long, and then you have to stop. So most people think of weight training in the gym, and it could be either free weights or machines. It could be with your own body, such as yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
It could be push-ups. It could be pull-ups. In the old days, that's what people did. They didn't have gyms or machines. And so anything that you have to move muscles for a certain amount of time. Okay. So in other words, if I was in a gym and I was in a machine and I was doing a bicep curl, I might do 15 repetitions. That would be the endurance part, and the strength would be being able to lift that weight at least once.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Third component, flexibility. This is a big one. So this is stretching. And most people think of stretching, well, I get up out of bed in the morning and I kind of just, you know, raise the arms a little bit. And that is stretching, but it's not stretching that's going to make a change in that person.
Mm-hmm.
So flexibility, lots of ways to stretch. There's active isolation. There's PNF. There's all kinds of stretching. But the main thing is that people are spending at least 5 to 15 minutes a day stretching all the muscle groups. And to know how to stretch, you see a professional,
okay?
Or you could get books, but to really know how to stretch, a professional can really show you how to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting because we always think about, we kind of forget about stretching, or think it's really basic. But I remember I want to say it was even in the 70s, and certainly when I was in sports, there we're talking about the good ways to stretch and the bad ways to stretch. And, of course, it's kind of changed a little bit over time. But the bouncing versus the not bouncing
The
cold stretching versus the warmed-up stretching. But that's a good question. Is when I was a runner in high school, we used to wait until we would warm up first. So we'd run the first mile before we'd start stretching. Is that – what's the latest on cold stretching versus warm stretching?
Absolutely stretch warm muscles. So you're right to run the mile first. You could jog in place, you could take a walk around the block, but stretching cold muscles, the temperature in the muscle is cold. It's going to be not comfortable. There's a chance you might pull a muscle, because if you stretch a muscle that's cold and stretch it and it gets too elongated, it could shorten right away and you could pull a muscle. Okay? So that's actually the muscle's way of protecting itself by shortening. So, yeah, you want to stretch warm muscles. And you're right. People do forget about this component. I see people going into aerobic classes, doing aerobics, doing muscle work in the aerobic class, and then running out the door for the last 10 minutes when we're warming down. And that is critical to getting the body. You know, you warm up. You do the whatever it is in the middle of that, and then you warm down again. It used to be called a cool down.
Right.
Same thing, warm down, cool down. So definitely want to stay for the stretching part.
And there are two more components.
Two more. If you do the first three, cardiovascular, muscle strength and endurance, and flexibility, the next two will fall in place. So the next two is a normal range of body composition. This means how much lean tissue you have, which is muscle, versus fat tissue. So obviously you want more muscle tissue than fat tissue. And in America today, people are suffering with more fat tissue than muscle. So for instance, a 50-year-old, a normal range of body composition would be somewhere between, let's say, 20% and 30%.
Okay.
30 would be the high end. 20% would be the better, to me, the healthier end. And then everything in between. So there's a pretty big range in there because we come in all body types, right?
Right.
Not all these things that we see in magazines, these models that we see in magazines. It's like 1% of the population.
Right. Or less, probably.
And not healthy, as we know.
Sure.
So body composition, when you have more muscle on your body and less fat, the muscle is metabolically more active. So it raises your metabolism and helps you to keep weight in control. Okay. And when I say weight, you know, getting on the scale is destructive. It's really not a good idea. You know, if you've put on a pound or two, you know by how your clothes fit, how you look in the mirror.
Right.
So I say to people, if you do the first three components, you're going to start putting muscle on your body. You're going to start to see your weight get back into balance. Okay. The last component,
I have a question, by the way, the body composition part. I've heard people talk about thin fat people, so people that are very thin but they don't have any muscle tone. Can you speak about that phenomenon?
This was graphically shown to me. There were two pictures of two men. They were exactly the same weight, let's say 180. One of the men had a pear-shaped body. He was obviously heavy in the gut. And it just was definitely looked like he was heavy. The other man was very muscular, lean waist, very muscular, and fit.
Hmm.
But they both weighed the same.
Wow.
So when you get on the scale, what are you measuring?
Mm-hmm.
You see a total weight. You don't see how much muscle you have versus how much fat.
Right.
If you, I mean, you look at me, right? I
mm-hmm.
look pretty fit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm overweight according to the height weight charts by a couple of pounds.
Wow.
And yet if I lose any more weight.
No. You know, if you look at Patty, she really has hardly any extra fat on her at all, I would say.
So the scale has been, I haven't owned a scale in 20 years easily. And when clients come to me and they're saying, I want to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
you know, first thing I ask them is, do you know what your body composition is? And they say, no.
Mm.
Do you know what you weigh? Oh, yeah. You know, and they're looking for that quarter of a pound
right.
difference every day. Or so I just think it's not the way to go. It,
mm-hmm.
it definitely is not the way to go.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. All right. And number five.
The last component, it's twofold. It's a normal range of a resting heart rate and a normal range for the average person is anywhere between, let's say, 60 and 100. Now, 100's high. You don't want to be 100.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be closer to 60, 70, 80. There are people that are in the 40s and 50s
mm-hmm.
that are perfectly fine. And I would say anything higher than 100 is too much. That means your heart's beating too fast
mm-hmm.
at rest.
Mm-hmm.
So can you imagine with activity?
Right.
The harder the heart has to work, the heart's a muscle. The harder it has to work, you know, the more your whole system has to work, your whole circulatory system, your lungs, your heart, et cetera. So that's the heart rate. The other part is blood pressure, a normal range of blood pressure. And textbook blood pressure used to be 120 over 80, but, you know, the medical association has made it even a higher standard. They're saying now that 120 over 80, 125 over 85 is even inching up there.
Hmm.
But here's the range from what I know and what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
140 over 90
mm-hmm.
is borderline hypertension. You definitely don't want to be there. And anything higher than that, you've got to look at changing your lifestyle, changing your diet, possibly medication. But to me, that should be the last resort. And as low as 90 over 50.
Okay? Mm.
Now, most people, when they get their blood pressure done, they go to a doctor and the nurse takes the blood pressure. They never ask the nurse what the numbers mean.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do, they always say, oh, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when people come to me, I explain to them what the diastolic, systolic means.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's very easily understandable. And once they know, it's like, oh, I get it.
Can you explain it to people?
Sure, real
yeah.
quick. The top number, the higher number,
mm-hmm.
is the systolic. That's when the heart's at rest. The heart is actually pulling in blood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at rest. And then the diastolic, the lower number, is the heart going boom.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. It's the other way around. What am I talking about? Hold on. I'm a little confused now. The diastolic is the lower number on the bottom. The systolic is the higher number, excuse me.
Okay.
So the lower number is when the heart's at rest, pulling in the blood, and then, boom, the heart gets pushed out against the artery wall to go to the rest of the body. So that's your higher number,
Got it.
Your systolic. So the higher number is the force of the blood hitting the arteries.
Mm.
And so you want that to be a lower number. You don't want it to be 190 or
right.
290, you want it to be as low as it can.
Mm-hmm.
The heart needs to be efficient to beat slowly, but hard enough to push the blood out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
of course, if that the higher that number, the more chance of damaging the heart.
Exactly.
And more,
yeah,
the heart has
the
to
force,
work.
The harder the force on the artery, the more of a beating it takes.
Mm.
And over a course of 60, 70 years of life, that's a lot of beating.
Mm-hmm.
So be nice to your heart. Get it in good shape so that it's big, because it's a muscle, it can grow,
mm-hmm.
and that it puts out blood effectively with a lower stroke volume.
Okay. More efficient.
Yes.
More efficient
Definitely
muscle.
More efficient. That's what we're looking for
right.
our bodies to
sure.
to make it easy to live in life. It's hard living in a body that's out of balance, whether it's overweight or not enough muscle or not flexible.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest things for people that are really inactive or overweight is that every day is just hard
yeah.
getting in the car, walking around. So the thought of considering exercising
sure.
is just be totally beyond their
sure.
consideration at that point.
It's too hard to think about physically, emotionally, and mentally, because mm-hmm. it's hard to move, like you said, in just daily life.
Right. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about people that haven't done any exercise before?
Sure.
Maybe people that are a little older that haven't done any exercise before, or people that are really overweight and that's just not been part of their lifestyle. Where can people like that start?
Yeah. Yeah, I see clients. I see everything from deconditioned clients to athletes mm-hmm. and everything in between. I would say to people who are just starting, no matter what shape you're in, start slow for sure. And pick an activity that you think you might like. If you absolutely hate to swim because mm-hmm. you've tried it mm-hmm. all your life and you either don't like chlorine water or you're not a swimmer or you sink, don't choose swimming.
Mm-hmm.
You intuitively, this is not a sport for you.
Right.
That's probably the only sport I don't like.
Mm.
I mean, I like body surfing, but swimming, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather bike 20 miles, whatever. So think about what you like to do. Maybe you like to dance. Maybe before you got out of balance, you danced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you disco danced or you ballet danced or whatever. Well, think about going to a group class, age appropriate and level, fitness level mm-hmm. appropriate. So you wouldn't go into a step aerobic class that was intermediate if you had never did step before.
Mm-hmm.
So this may be at a studio. It may be at a gymnasium. It might be at a gym, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of places you can look in the papers, online. And just go in and maybe the first time you observe the class.
Mm, good idea.
To see, do I think maybe I can do this? And what's the instructor like? Is the instructor supportive and caring and watching everybody? Or is the instructor doing their own thing while everybody's doing things wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so pick your instructor carefully. It might be a beginner yoga class just to get some muscle work and some stretching in.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a stretch class. So you start slow. Stretching's a big one. I knew a woman that all she did was stretch, and she lost weight.
Wow.
Every year that she stretched.
Hmm.
And got in better shape.
Mm-hmm.
So you slowly start hitting the components I talk about.
Sure. And less chance of getting injured, I'm sure, for
Absolutely.
Her. And that's
right.
really, if you're injured, you're certainly not going to be very healthy or in right. shape. So just even that.
Yeah.
I was in a gym. I used to swim to some extent, and so I was doing some swimming in a pool. And I said, there's this great water aerobics class
sure.
with all these older women
sure.
in it. And it just seemed so fun because if you haven't done a lot of that, then jumping around, you know, on the dance floor may be a little challenging. But this class was all probably women in their 60s.
Sure,
and it looked really fun and yeah. really much easier for your body to not have to take all that force.
Yeah. Yeah. Water. If you do like water, if you don't like swimming, but you like water,
mm-hmm.
getting into the water, you're more buoyant.
Mm-hmm.
You're still getting impact on the joints, but you don't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And because the water is very supportive. So again, a class like that, a beginning aqua aerobics class, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And again, go and observe it.
Right.
You know, a lot of like YMCAs, sometimes they'll allow you to take classes without being a member. Sometimes not. You'd have to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
YMCAs are a good place to start because they usually cater to youth and elder and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the YMCA, YWCA as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are intimidated by gyms. But if you go and visit, then you'll know.
Yes.
Everything is intimidating the first time.
Right.
I'm a personal trainer. The first time I walked into the gym that I currently am at,
mm-hmm.
I was a little intimidated
mm-hmm.
because you don't know anybody. The equipment's unusual, different. You know, you mm-hmm. never saw it before. Of course you're going to be a little at ill at ease.
Right.
But it's a start. You have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And walking, almost everybody can walk, right?
Yes.
So you start off walking 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're going to be out of breath. But you pat yourself on the back and you say, you know what? That was the first 100.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick story.
Yes.
I used to drive to this gym on the East Coast every day. And I saw this woman who was pretty overweight, struggling to walk.
Mm.
Right? She was on my route. A month later, she's walking a little bit more upright, and I see some body changes. Well, moral of the story, a year later, she is running. She's got on headphones. She was in shape. And I rolled down the window, and I said, you go, girl. Because she just slowly got into it
wow.
and did it. And it was just great to see.
Wow. It's a great story.
Yeah, it happens.
Yes, absolutely.
It happens everywhere.
Mm-hmm. There's a lesson for life in there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about cardio and fat burning, because it seems like everybody wants to do this. And I guess in terms of what's the ideal way to burn fat, and then also let's bring in a little strength training, because I know there have been periods in my life where it was, let's just burn fat, and so it was all cardio, and it wasn't as effective as maybe it could have been if I had a little more well-rounded fitness plan.
Right. It goes back to the five components. Mm-hmm. You want balance in your life. There are people that are very muscular, but they're not flexible. There are people that have the best heart, lung, circulatory system, which is going to be your cardiovascular work, and yet there are very little muscle tone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we were talking earlier, you and I, about the jogger, that strong legs, you know, hitting the pavement. Mm-hmm. Certainly strong legs, but upper body very weak if mm-hmm. they're not doing anything for the upper body.
Right.
Okay, cardio. Back in the 70s. Kenneth Cooper in the Aerobics Institute, American College of Sports Medicine, said aerobics, aerobics, aerobics. And America listened.
Hmm.
Now, of course, we know that you just can't do cardiovascular work. Reason being is, yes, you are burning fat when you do aerobic work, and that's mm-hmm. aerobic, right? You're doing it where you can sustain it without having to stop,
mm-hmm.
at least 20 to 30, 40 minutes, whatever. So if you're only doing cardiovascular work in your life, you're not only going to burn fat, you're going to burn muscle.
Hmm.
You have to give your body a reason to hang on to muscle. So if I'm doing something muscular 3-4 days a week, the body will say, when I'm doing cardio, the body's smart. Mm-hmm. It will say, she's going to be using this muscle tomorrow. I better hang on to it. I'm going to go to the stored fat.
Mm.
So it's very smart about that. And you know, it's not that quite that black and white. But,
right.
But really, we need to do the muscle strength and endurance work. In fact, when people come to me and say, what do you think is more important? I say the muscle strength and endurance for changing composition.
Wow.
And managing weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you want your heart and lungs in good shape, too.
Mm-hmm.
It'll make your weight training or whatever you do for resistance training easier
mm-hmm.
because of endurance. Okay? So if you're doing cardio 7 days a week and not doing any muscle strength and endurance, you're going to have skin that's kind of jiggly.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to have good muscle tone. And most people are exhausting themselves cardiovascularly. They think more is better.
Right.
Because what's on their mind? Weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, train, don't drain. Train for health, not for weight loss. The mm-hmm. weight loss will happen.
Right.
Your body will balance. In fact, if you muscle train, mm-hmm. you're actually going to gain weight. Who cares?
Right.
If you're stuck to the scale and that's all that matters to you, well, then you do care.
Mm-hmm.
But what's important is balance.
Right.
Who cares what we weigh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as you're not out of balance.
Right.
So to answer the question, not just cardiovascular, you have to do some kind of resistance training. Again, it could be yoga, Pilates, using your own body, using free weights, using machines that add resistance, any of those things.
And in terms of, you know, probably I think it was in the 90s maybe, it was all about exercise very slowly but for a long period of time. That's mm-hmm. going to burn the most fat. Mm-hmm. And now there's this, do these short sprints, and that's going to burn the most fat. What's your take on all of this?
There are studies about both. Who has time to do a 30-second bicep curl for one rep, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
There's something about the slow burn that works, but I say, and based on studies, you functionally train.
Mm.
You work at the speed that you would in real life. So if I'm picking up a bag of groceries, that's using my quads and my buttocks and my bicep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do it in a 30-second lift.
Right.
Like I do in the gym.
Right.
I'm going to, you know, get down, hold my abs in, do a good squat, pick it up with my whole body mm-hmm. in about 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Do that in the gym.
Mm,
right?
Makes sense.
You know, lower, when I go to squat for that grocery, I'm not going down fast. I'm going down at a pace because I've got to make sure my abs are in, you know, I've got the right body mechanics. So I'm going down slowly to pick it up. Okay. And then when I go to pick up the weight,
now I'm going a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing with a bicep curl. When I'm lowering the weight, under control, and when I raise the weight strong, coming from the muscle, not from momentum, okay, with good body mechanics, et cetera. And that's where a good professional comes in.
And that makes so much sense because the certain gym exercises, those different machines and things, that's not – we probably never move our body in those particular ways with the weight. I mean, who sits at the edge of the bed with, who knows, groceries on their ankles, lifting them up and down?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, just because a machine is in a gym doesn't mean it's biomechanically sound.
Mm.
And I, with my clients, I do a lot of using our own body and things like, you know, stability balls and foam rollers and balance boards, et cetera, because that's much more functional. And the average person in a gym, 90%, well, let's go 95% of the people in a gym are not going to be competitive bodybuilders.
Right.
They want to come in and they want general health.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get in shape. You don't have to be a competitive athlete to get in shape.
Right.
They're taking it to the other end, to the extreme. And competitive athletes, you know, they have problems later in life a lot of times, joint problems, because they took their bodies to that extreme.
Mm-hmm.
The average person doesn't want to do that, nor can they.
Right.
Right.
And from being in some sports when in my younger days, I certainly know that it was also it wasn't about listening to your body. So it was, we'll take the ibuprofen for the inflammation, those kinds of things. So it was work, and really stressing the body out.
Yeah.
That brings me to, you were talking about kind of, you mentioned briefly stress on the body and working out really hard. And I'd love for you to talk about, there are people that come to my practice that are exercising, just exercise all the time and to an extreme level, and it actually can inhibit weight loss. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about over-exercising and cortisol and the effects of that on the body.
Sure. I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, Americans, more is better, right? Harder, 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 push, push, push. Again, I'll go back to a gym setting. Most people in the gym are over-training. They think about when you're working your muscles or your cardiovascular system, you're actually breaking down muscle tissue. People think you're building muscle in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
You're breaking it down.
Hmm.
How you build the muscle back up again is by going home, resting, giving the muscle rest time, and eating good food and getting a good night's sleep.
Mm.
That's how the muscle repairs itself.
Because
in the gym, you're breaking down little capillaries. They're actually bleeding. They're pulling apart. They're bleeding. And when you rest them and give them good food, they'll repair bigger and stronger so that it can handle the next overload that you give it, providing it's the progressive overload.
Right.
So most people are overtraining. They're constantly breaking down muscle tissue, and they don't understand why they don't see results and why they're always tired.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good indicator right there. Okay?
Yeah.
So I say to people, train, don't drain.
Hmm.
You should come out of a session, whether it's cardiovascular or muscle strength and endurance, feeling a little bit tired, but good.
Mm-hmm.
I accomplished something and I feel good about it.
Right.
Whereas most people, they're dragging their butts out of the gym and they're sore for days.
Right.
That means you really insulted the muscle. The only people that should be sore for days are competitive bodybuilders or athletes that have to have the muscle strength and endurance component.
Right.
The rest of us, yeah, you're sore initially because you're just starting a new program, but then you feel like you worked out, but not major soreness.
Right.
Okay. Did I answer the question? Where
we were talking about cortisol too.
Okay. So, and going back to people that overdo their cardiovascular program, they're exhausted all the time, and they come to me and say, "I'm exhausted." Well, I said, "Well, back off a little bit." "Oh, no, I can't."
Yes.
I'll lose what I have.
Yes.
No, you'll actually see more results.
Mm.
And I have never had anybody come back to me and say, "What you told me was wrong." They come back to me and say, "You were right.
Wow.
I feel so much better doing less."
It's interesting.
Okay? I mean, for most people, three cardio bouts a week of about 30 minutes of, you know, a hill program, not where you're doing the same level, but you're actually taxing the heart up and down, going up and down hills, either really walking up and down hills or on a cardio piece. That's probably going to be sufficient. Now, we're told 5, 6, 7 days. Well, on your days off, you know, take a walk. Do something a little less intense. Okay? Right. It's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. If you find that 3 days a week is not giving you results that you want after a month, like a little bit of weight loss or more toning, then increase it to four.
Mm-hmm.
But don't start at five or six.
Right.
Why do more than we have to? I'd rather be reading a good book or something, right?
Right.
So, I don't know. It depends. So the cardiovascular, don't overdo. Same thing with the muscle strength and endurance. Don't overdo it. Okay? And the cortisol. Cortisol is a chemical. It's a hormone. Chemical, same thing. That's secreted by the adrenals.
Mm-hmm.
When we are kind of in the flight or fight mode.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're exercising, your body doesn't know the difference between you being on a bike or being chased by a tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Back in cave people time, right? Same mechanism. So the epinephrine and, you know, the norepinephrine get secreted
mm-hmm.
to keep us alert and active so we can move.
Right.
If it continues more than a couple of minutes, cortisol gets released to sustain that level of activity.
Mm.
Okay? So when cortisol is high, it's real hard to burn fat.
Mm-hmm.
You're burning sugar because sugar is the fat-burning fuel,
mm-hmm.
the fast-burning fuel. So when you stop the activity, the cortisol level will come down, okay? And you will start to burn some fat, right? But people that are stressed all the time or that are over cardio doing you know, stressing the body all the time, whether it's you have a fight with your boss or your work is stressful or you're working out too hard, cortisol's high all the time. You're not going to burn fat.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be burning the cortisol. Your adrenals are going to be burning all the time.
Right.
The motor's constantly running. It's called living on the edge, mm-hmm. and a lot of people do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do? We take more stimulants in, coffee. At the end of the night when we're so beat, we take alcohol to kind of bring us down or sleeping pills,
mm-hmm.
and we get on this vicious cycle. We're working too hard at work, we're training too hard in the gym, and we need stimulants and depressants to, you know,
right,
to bring us down on either end, mm-hmm. up or down.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good lifestyle.
Right. And, of course, as we know, over time, that just really leads to immune system problems, health problems, all sorts of things. And
body starts breaking down.
Right, right. So I guess the secret to that is doing exercise that you feel a little tired, but that you feel energized going into it. You feel energized coming out of it. And on a daily basis, you're having more energy rather than less.
Yep. Yeah, take rest days. It's
right.
good. It's good. And when you come out of that activity within an hour or two, you should feel refreshed
mm-hmm.
again. And it's important to, I know we're going to get into a little food,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, but what to eat before you work out, during and after, how to hydrate and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. So for those of you just tuning in, you are listening to KPOO San Francisco, 89.5 FM. You are listening to Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, and we have Patty Torza on talking about all about health and fitness. And you can listen to this show and any of our past shows at realitysandwichradio.com. So let's go into that. Let's go into the nutrition piece of it.
Sure.
Since this is our mutual area of interest, this will be a fun part of the conversation. And, you know, of course, people often come to us wanting to lose weight. They come for nutrition wanting to lose weight. Of course, a key component being what kind of activity are you doing. But let's talk about, from an activity standpoint, how is nutrition impactful and important for somebody's fitness?
Sure. 60 to 80% of a person's success is nutrition related. In getting results, in becoming fit.
Mm-hmm.
60 to 80% is nutrition related. So that's big.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody, I kind of smile when people say to me in the gym, I work out so I can eat anything I want. It's like, okay, so you're trying to build a better body and then you're destroying it by eating, you know, poor quality food.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that makes sense. So you really have to think about it. I mean, yes, exercising, maybe you can eat more. Certainly,
mm-hmm.
when you exercise, you actually have to take in more food
mm-hmm.
because energy output, you know, input, output, it has to be there.
Right.
I mean, I eat probably around 2,500 calories a day.
Mm-hmm.
Women in this day and age that are in an office all day and not exercising, if they ate 2,500 calories a day, they'd be huge.
Right.
I mean, I know a lot of women that are on 1,200 calories a day, which is way low.
Yes,
we know that.
Yes.
I mean, that's basal metabolic rate.
Yes.
That's just to sustain life.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to eat. And the key is quality foods. And, you know, our training is in whole foods, foods that are found just as they occur in nature.
Right.
So packaged foods that have a label on it, for the most part, are processed, either minimally or maximally.
Right.
Okay. I guess the difference between a good loaf of bread and a Twinkie. You know, the loaf of bread is could be minimally processed, although Wonder Bread is a little bit more maximally. Am I getting in trouble?
No.
Okay, good. You know, Twinkie is pretty processed.
Right.
It's all chemical. So all you Twinkie freaks, I hope you can get off them.
Hopefully there aren't too many these days.
Right.
But this really comes back to the concept of calories, because in the past it's always been calories, calories, calories. So someone thinks I burn more calories, I get to eat more calories, and they really don't care if it's a Twinkie or it's sort of licensed to eat the Twinkie because it's all about calories. But you and I know that there's more. So maybe you can elaborate a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. People are trying not to eat. They think eating is something that gets them fat. And if you eat good, clean foods, you can actually eat more, be healthy, you know, have good energy, and look good, too.
Right.
You know, we all want to look good. I guess I wanted to go back to, because I didn't quite answer the other question that we talked about, calories. And the quality of the food is the most important. Now, certainly you can overeat quality foods and gain weight. Because it is about calories in, calories out. But the types of foods that we eat that cause cravings, i.e. foods that are refined carbs, sugary foods, those are the ones that are really going to get us in trouble. They are, you know, low-energy type of foods. Yeah, you get a quick burst of sugar in the bloodstream, and then you come crashing down. So if I'm somebody that's exercising, and I start off with coffee and a pastry for breakfast, I'm going to be high for about 20 minutes, and then I'm going to come crashing down during that workout. And I won't be able to, I'll bonk. I won't be able to continue that workout. So, and let's take, you know, a bowl of cold cereal that's touted as healthy. Most of it is so little whole grain. We're talking maybe 2% whole grain and lots of sugar. Okay, without naming any names, people have to read ingredients. So a bowl of cold cereal with skim milk and a banana, which we're told is healthy, is the wrong breakfast to have.
Even a non-sugared cereal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the old days, and I guess we keep saying the old days, we're showing our age, Julie. Well, I'm showing my age. You know, kids would go off to school eating porridge.
Right.
Gruel, you know, and you know, it was sweetened with either maple syrup or honey, you know, real maple syrup, real raw honey, or fruit. And you know, it lasted 4 or 5 hours. And I wonder, you know, my clients, I'm always talking to them about what to eat before they see me. So a couple of eggs in an omelet with some vegetables would be wonderful for breakfast.
Yes.
And would be sustaining. You know, now you can't eat that right before you work out because protein and fat take longer to get through the digestive system. But an hour before you work out, that's probably an okay breakfast. Okay. And everybody's different. A good bowl of oatmeal, you know, steel cut oats that take time to cook, not the quick oats. You know, that an hour before you work out, that should be fine. Everybody's different. It might be an hour and a half, it might be a half hour. But eat something before you work out. Might be yogurt and fruit. Whole plain yogurt with good whole fruit, your own fruit.
And why is this? Because people are probably thinking, I want to burn fat. If I eat food, I'm going to be burning the food. So how do you explain that to somebody?
Well, let's see. Yeah, you'll burn the food, but you're also going to burn fat. You're always burning fat. If you're doing aerobic, even anaerobic work, you're burning some fat. Okay, and a lot of times you continue, because your metabolism is high after you work out, you continue losing and burning fat later in the day.
Right.
So 2-3 hours later, the muscle strength and endurance work I did is still working for me. Okay. So you're always burning fat, and see, you got to eat. You got to eat before you work out, before you do any kind of activity. Anybody knows that if you're on a hike and you don't have food with you and you bonk, you have to sit down and somebody's got to carry you out. It gets pretty bad. So eat before you work out. If it's a real light workout, you might get away without eating. but then you better eat right after you work out.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to people that, well, I can't eat in the morning. I say, well, then have a piece of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, something that's, you know, it's unrefined. It's a good natural product, and it's got some sugar in it, natural sugars that are going to help you through your workout.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but after your workout, you also want to eat within 90 minutes.
Mm.
The reason for that is there's a window of opportunity to put sugar back into the muscles, mm-hmm. because stored sugar in the muscles is called glycogen, and that's our energy if we need to run quick.
Mm.
Okay, you're crossing the street and a car is about to hit you. The muscle will put the sugar right into the bloodstream, mm-hmm. so that you can get away, you know, not get hit.
Right.
Okay. So we want to make sure that those stores are always filled. And help me, Julie. Where was that?
What might be an after workout?
Oh, okay. Okay. So food. So you definitely want to eat afterwards. So then we're talking. It should be protein and carb after your workout. Mm. And protein and fat also go together in nature, so it's okay to have the fat.
Mm-hmm.
So protein and carb, the carb to fill the glycogen stores in the muscle,
mm-hmm.
and the protein to repair the tissue that you broke down.
Mm-hmm.
They're both needed. Studies used to be carbs only. Now studies show you need both of them. So think of what has protein, carb, and fat in it.
Mm-hmm.
All natural foods.
Right.
But particularly eggs, right? They're mm-hmm. going to have protein and fat. Carbohydrates would be something like vegetables or fruit or a whole grain like brown rice or quinoa or millet.
Mm-hmm.
Beans, whole beans,
mm-hmm.
right? Black beans, lentils, any kind of bean. Who says you can't have that after you work out for breakfast?
Mm-hmm.
I have eggs and beans for breakfast at times. I have eggs and rice for breakfast. So people really need to think about what they're eating during, before, and after. If you're doing an activity that's longer than 90 minutes, then you want to have food with you.
Hmm.
Okay? Maybe some nuts or fruit,
mm-hmm.
things that are kind of easy to take with you, to carry with you.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because mm-hmm. the couple marathons that I ran, you know, the food that these people eat, the stress they put on their body and then the food that they eat, to me, is unbelievable. These goos and and even the sports bars, I couldn't believe that this was attempting to nourish the body during this very physically active time. Yeah. So what do you think, and what do you think's better than that?
Yeah, I've done a lot of research because I speak for Team in Training,
mm-hmm.
to the people that are running half marathons and marathons. So, you know, those are pretty extensive events,
mm-hmm.
that are long in duration, and you have to drink and hydrate, hydrate and eat. The companies that are out there are doing the best they can. They've got the latest research on how not to bonk,
mm-hmm.
and how to keep your metabolism high and your energy high, your sugar levels,
mm-hmm.
because you're basically running on sugar.
Right.
At some point, yes, you're using your fat, but you're mainly using the sugar. And so these goos and these Clif bars and different protein bars, et cetera, mm-hmm. will do the trick, but at a cost.
Mm.
They play havoc with our blood sugar.
Right.
So, you know, I say to people, soak nuts,
mm-hmm.
so they're more bioavailable to your body.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure they're raw and organic to start with. You soak them for anywhere from 1 to 3 days in water. Dry them, refrigerate them, and take these along on your run,
mm.
or whatever event you're doing. Take fruit. And if it has to be dried fruit, so be it. Dried fruit is a little bit more concentrated sugar because the water's taken mm-hmm. out of it. But it's better than some of the goos and things out
mm-hmm.
there. They're just tough on the body. They're high in fructose, which is tough on the liver. I wouldn't do it very long term.
Right.
I have a recipe for vanishing fruit nut balls.
Which are wonderful, by the way. I've eaten more than my share.
You know, you pop one or two of these suckers while you're running, and woohoo, it's a much better choice.
Give just a general idea of what are in those if someone wants to try to recreate them themselves.
The vanishing fruit
yes.
nut balls. You're basically talking ground up pecans and Brazil nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you could use any nut.
Mm-hmm.
Honey, raw honey. Dates. And raisins,
mm-hmm.
right? And a little bit of lemon zest or lime zest.
Mm-hmm.
I use lemon zest. And you can add a little water, and you make them into balls, and you can keep them in the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
And then just put a couple in your you know, a little fanny pack or pocket or whatever, and go out and do your thing. Mm-hmm.
They're great.
Yeah. Yeah. We probably should mention hydration, too.
Yes, do yeah. that.
People don't drink enough water, or maybe they drink too much. I don't know. Usually, if you're active, you want to drink at least half your weight in ounces, and that would be your normal weight. Okay? So if you're 50 pounds overweight, you're not going to drink half that in ounces. You just couldn't. Mm-hmm. You just couldn't. So you want to definitely stay hydrated. I recommend, highly recommend filtered water. Bottled water has a lot of problems in that, one, just to make the plastic that the bottle is in takes oil.
Mm-hmm.
And unless plastic's recycled, you know, it's waste.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to switch over to glass with everything I do, or stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, you definitely want to hydrate when you're doing cardiovascular work, especially because you're sweating out water.
Right.
So you've got to replenish that water. I'm trying to think of how many ounces. I think it's 6 to 8 ounces every 15 minutes.
Hmm.
Okay. So
that's quite a bit.
That's quite a bit. Right. About every 15 minutes, depending how hot it is, depending on your system, mm-hmm. et cetera. But drink good water. Nothing caffeinated. You know, there are studies that are saying, oh, no, it doesn't pull water out of the body. And there's just as many studies that say, yes, it does pull water out of the body.
Yes.
I'm of the belief it does pull water out of the body.
Yes.
Because I feel it.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I feel it happening.
Yes, I agree.
Right. So nothing caffeinated. All the sports drinks, they're high in sugar. They're high in calories. I think, you know, there are a few brands that are good out there. Cytomax in particular is one of the better brands. But for the average person, good old-fashioned water. If you're running more than 90 minutes, you need electrolytes in the water, sodium, potassium, mm-hmm. magnesium, et cetera, or you will cramp up. And more than 90, you also need carbohydrates in the water.
Makes sense.
All right. So that's where the Cytomax would come in.
Sure. Well, in our last few minutes here, I'd love to just talk about a couple of the myths, especially the turning fat into muscle and the spot reducing, two of my favorites. So maybe you can address those.
Yeah. It's hard to believe with all the – well, there's still so much literature out there that's, you know, misleading. But still people come to me and think that fat tissue and muscle tissue are the same tissue and that you can turn your fat into muscle. And then if you don't work out, your muscle will go back to fat. Mm. Muscle – attaches to bone. It is there forever. It could be small or it could be large, depending on whether you work it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's there. It's always there. It's attached. We all have muscles, and everybody has the same muscles in the same amount. Mm-hmm. You're never going to lose muscle,
right?
Unless you have it taken out surgically. And fat can, I mean, muscle can grow. It can get bigger,
mm-hmm.
and it can get flaccid if you don't work it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Less toned. So fat, however, kind of floats. It's not really attached. It lays over muscles, around muscles, in muscles. It lays over organs and all. It's in all tissues of our body. A certain amount of fat is good.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of excess fat is not good.
Mm-hmm.
You're just carrying around stored energy waiting to be used.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are overweight, think of it that way. If I start moving, I'm going to start using the stored energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So therefore, fat and muscle being two different tissues, they're not going to be turned into each other. So you make muscle stronger and bigger so that your metabolism is high, so that it will eventually oxidize the fat in the working muscle.
Makes
you
sense.
Have to do something to lose the fat.
Right. So in our last couple minutes here, I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of you. But beforehand, mm-hmm. I wanted to just find out if people are looking for a professional and they want some help from someone such as yourself, what should they be looking for? How should they choose someone?
Sure. I say to people, interview a trainer like you're interviewing somebody for a job, because they're going to be working for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you want the best qualified person for that job. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the best qualified person costs more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you don't have a good qualified professional, you're wasting your time.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I say is find out their certification and ask them to tell you about that certification, what they learned.
Mm-hmm.
A good certification for a trainer, which a trainer should not only be able to help people in the gym, but in other areas, flexibility and, you know, cardiovascular, et cetera. But you want to find out if this person had hands-on training on the fitness floor. Did they take people through a workout while other trainers were watching them that were professional, okay, while they were training? So there are a few national bodies that are excellent. American College for Sports Medicine, National Academy of Sports Medicine, that's mine, and a few others that you have to go to a week-long workshop, take oral written exams, you're on the gym floor, and you have to have continuing education credits every year. That's going to be a trainer that's going to probably be a good trainer, as long as they have good personable skills, you know, personal skills with people. So find out a little bit about what their training was like. There are training certifications where through the mail you take an exam and that's it.
Wow.
So, I mean, if I have the right book, I can do that. And I just look up, you know, the right answer and I don't have the training.
Right.
So kind of buyer beware. Make sure the person that asks you what your goals are. Not, well, I'm going to do this for you because these are my goals for you.
Right.
First thing I ask people, what are your goals? What do you want to accomplish? And unless it's unrealistic, like, well, I want to lose 30 pounds in a week for this wedding, then I'm going to go with their goals because this is what they want. And, you know, we're always talking about what's realistic, what's not.
Right, right.
So just treat them like an interview.
That's great advice.
And don't pay for a lot of sessions up front. Meet with them once and then make your decision.
That's a
because
great.
Then you're not you know, beholding to a large sum of money.
Yeah, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Patty Torza. How can people get a hold of you? Find out more.
Well, they can email me at healthworks with an S, HEALTHWORKS, the number 5 at AOL.com. I don't have a website. I thought about it, but I'm pretty busy right now, so it's not in the cards right now. They can also call me at 510-835-2745. And I will get back to them.
Great.
I work out of two gyms, and I work out of people's homes. I go to their homes if they'd like to train in their home.
Now, do you specifically work in the East Bay?
I work in the East Bay. I tried coming over to San Francisco, but the traffic and parking, it takes
tough.
Too long.
Yes.
It doesn't. So I work out of Oakland, Berkeley, Richmond, you know.
Great.
Those areas.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, Patty, thanks so much for being with us today.
Julie, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right.
You are listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living. You can find out more about my nutrition services at healthfulliving.org. And you can listen to this show and any past shows at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon.